It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this second full week of September 2022. It is the 12th day of September. It is a Moran Monday, and oh mercy, we have Morans. We have lots and lots of Morans, definitely Morans. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the Great Globe Round, and whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. And thanks for listening. Hi, I'm Robin. I scarcely know where we begin because there is so much to get into in the way of Moranity. But if you do pop by just about now, you will be greeted by the early chat room arrivers. And that means you'll get a big howdy from Squeaky and Roger in Oregon. And Irish Day, and you'll be capably moderated by longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has, yes, it is a red letter day, folded space to become Man Cave. Squeaky is, in fact, in the Man Cave. Sparky is, in fact, in the Man Cave. And he hasn't been able to be there for quite some time because of the, you know, the infernal heat of folding space into small red stars on the far arm of a nondescript, low-rent galaxy in the corner of the cosmos. That's us. On the wrong side of the galactic tracks. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, letting me know that the stream is getting out in every way possible. And by the way, did I mention that Sparky is also a slayer of brain? So, might be time for brain to get lightsabered. How cute. It's adorable. But anyway, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we send out thanks to our 12th, 11th, and 10th day of the month subscribers. And that means we say thank you to Gary in New York. Thank you to Paul. Thank you so much. Thanks as well to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you to John. Thank you to and thank you to Christopher. And thank you to Tony in Chico. Thank you to David, now up in Oregon. Thank you, David. I hope you're well. Thank you to our pal, Joe Vecchio. Thanks again to Paul from Parts Unknown. And thanks to Zed for jumping in back on the ninth. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you so very kindly. And thank you to our anonymous friend as well that I did not notice had come in on Friday evening. Thank you, one and all, for helping to keep this all on the air, because keeping this all on the air is proving to be more and more difficult. Let's see. I'm trying to think of where we wound up. We're right up around the $1,900 mark, trying to get caught up with fundraising. So that means today, all of last week. Yep, that's about right. And we're almost done with fundraising for Friday, September the 2nd. So that's about where we are, unless Brother Deacon Asa recalls differently. I think that's pretty close, though. Pretty close. So as far as More In Mondays go, let me get the email open here. I was trying to get a little more juice of a charge on the production desk iPad, but I think we can continue doing that until we need it for broadcast purposes. I got to tell you, it's been monsoon summer, and now we're moving toward monsoon autumn. My goodness gracious, there's about a week of summer left, and Darlene and I are grieving. Hey, Darlene, I know, and I swear to God, one of these days I'm going to go to the grocery store, and they're going to have pumpkin spice Vienna sausage and pumpkin spice Slim Jims. Well, no, your Cosmos mentioned. Ralph says, maybe you can imitate Carl Sagan. Billions and billions of stars, and none of them even wanted anywhere near us. Yeah, something like that. I don't want to imitate Carl Sagan. Ralph's him. He dead. Jesse Lee somehow finds his... we find ourselves with a Jesse Lee Peterson mention early on... early on a More In Monday. Funny how that happens. I did do that. Peter and Libby up in New York with a note. Saturday night, the West Virginia Mountaineers stunk up the joint and lost to Kansas of all people. Peter and Libby write, as you are a big booster of West Virginia's natural beauty, I thought you'd be interested in this, which we thought is unbelievable. The tailgaters had the energy to crush their cans, but couldn't be bothered to take away their own trash. I'll refrain from making comments about white trash. See this comment from this subreddit. About 30 years ago, the Redditor writes, my son was vomiting blood after chemo late on a rainy Friday night before a football game the next day. I was parked in the hospital parking lot when someone came in and told me I would have to move my car for the football tailgaters the next day. I objected to the best of my ability based on how sick my son was. It was dark and raining, and there was no place close to park. Hospital made it clear that football was top priority and didn't care about either me or my son, and I've never cared about WVU football ever since that night. My son died several months later from cancer. I don't know who WVU played the next day, but they lost. I graduated from WVU years earlier. The photograph in question, and it is pretty moronic, is of a parking lot absolutely strewn with trash, garbage cans overflowing, and Peter and Libby, I suspect the only reason that they crushed their aluminum cans is because they were disgusted. Yeah, and I am trying to put you in touch with folks as the possibility, you know, within the limits of what folks want. But anyway, thanks for sending that along. It's that parking lot probably looks like every other college football parking lot and professional football parking lot and God, baseball stadium parking lots, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because, well, group behavior is often not the most ennobling of human behavior. You can talk to an individual. It's hard to reason with a mob. Yeah, I know that parking lot very, very well for a variety of reasons. So, true enough, Lee in New York says, wait, you can't do Sagan because he's dead? Don't you still do Ronnie Reagan? Well, there you go again. Fair enough. Busted. Right. Yeah. As we go into this Morin Monday, several issues present themselves as possibilities. Over the weekend, here in almost level west by coal Manchinistan, in particular the little county seat near where I live, lo and behold, and we're not going to spend a lot of time, don't worry, you don't have to flip out and run away. One of the local little watering holes had two drag shows on one day, one on Saturday, Saturday night. And the one in the afternoon, because, you know, this is, again, wouldn't be a story if it weren't for the fact that this has become the outrage du jour of the white wing, the Republicans in this country. God, they're so dumb. I mean, really, you know, we should probably do this right. Yeah, let's do this right.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land, you know. Morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Morin Monday on the horn. Yes, here, mere steps off of the Carnival Midway. We've erected the Morin Monday tent, this thin cybernetic veil of canvas behind which reside all manner of right-wing Morans, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, baggers, booger-eaters, maggots, libertarians, Republicans, one and all. Oh, probably would. Yeah, let's not leave that. For God's sakes, you know, all these years I've been doing this and I've left out the Christians. Anyway, nonetheless, just as though moments ago you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in an aimless but aching desire to take home a little baby, not particularly precious iguana, over here, we're flinging wide the door, the flap, to the Morin Monday tent. With the general advisory that you keep a close eye on and a hand on, purse straps, wallets, fanny packs, belly packs, rings, bracelets, necklaces, piercing jewelry, pets, small children, and even a crossbody European-style messenger bag, which is totally masculine. Because, of course, as ever, the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans, and you will. And so, with that introduction, yes, there was a show at 3 o'clock in Fayetteville, and it was family-friendly. There was nothing licentious, there was nothing suggestive, nothing whatsoever. It was basically just, you know, dance and some lip sync by guys dressed as women. What's to hate on, right? Well, there was a hearty contingent of ugly, vicious, ignorant, stupid, dead from the neck up right-wingers and Christians there with their signs about Jesus and grooming and, right, yeah. I mean, it always, I got to thinking about it for a reason, and it strikes me as odd that people will have, because, you know, we're talking about right-wingers and Christians and the like. It always strikes me as odd that they have a conniption over female impersonators, which is basically what drag is. It's a performance art. I damn sure can't do it. A lot goes into it. And nonetheless, well, the same people that are complaining about drag are also the same people who will let their little children watch full-grown men wearing less clothing than drag queens wear pretend to beat the ever-loving daylights out of each other while wearing the less clothing that the drag queens than the drag queens wear, and the clothing they're wearing being positively guess my religion briefs. With their hands all between the other dude's crotches and swirling around and laying on people and sweating on them and pretending to punch them. But that's wholesome family entertainment. Got it. Oh, my God. So they protested at the 3 o'clock show and then, of course, the 9 o'clock show. And I didn't go to either one of these, frankly. I guess the freaks showed back up, and by freaks I'm talking about the protesters, and protested the 9 o'clock show too. Because families and the churins. Oh, my aching back. Yeah, because these people were Christians, I'm guessing they don't know anything about, say, Shakespeare. Now, we are an enlightened and knowledgeable community, so we know. For instance, the first time that Romeo and Juliet was performed, the role of Juliet was played by a prepubescent boy, because women were not allowed upon the stage in merry old Elizabethan England, because it was deemed to be dirty and beneath the dignity of a good and decent woman. Oof. Sorry, that's my King Charles impression. Oof. Which is also a Bugs Bunny impression. Works out nicely, frankly. But really, Juliet and Romeo and Juliet would have been standing right there on the stage, a kissing and everything, and a hugging, and a embracing. And a fake dying. Do you suppose the manly men who worry about drag queens know anything about that? Oh, they'll be all for shutting down the theater soon, I guess. For the life of me, I cannot understand. And help me if you'd like. For the life of me, I cannot understand why if people get so bent and worked up about what other people do with their lives. I mean, some people like to go to Morgantown and drink copious amounts of beer and leave the parking lot a trashed out, littered up mess, but I have yet to see a Republican complaining about that. No. Because it's okay for the children to watch the grown-ups be all out of their minds and liquored up and beered up and whatever and stumbling around in the rain and whatnot. That's cool. You see how this all comes back down to misogyny? What is it about the fragility of masculinity that gets so freaked out by guys put, I mean, it's positively deuteronomical. You know. And a man shall not put on the raiment of a woman, and a woman shall not put on the raiment of a man. Ha! Yeah. Even though they were all wearing the same crappy ass, the shitty desert textiles. What made the difference? Was it the necklaces? Maybe the bangles? I love the bangles. They weren't as, I mean, come on. They weren't as good as the go-go's, but they were good. Susanna Hoff, wasn't it? Walk like an Egyptian. Oh, that works nicely within the whole analogy. But I got nothing. On the other hand, I mention all of this because of another story I found this weekend. Down in Polk County, Florida, they had a huge bust this weekend. The announcement was made Friday. Oh, you're absolutely right, Ron and Raleigh. Ron says, I guess the venerable art of kabuki theater's out of the question. Yeah, well, it all is. I mean, God. Men in dresses, women in dresses, the culture is falling. Meanwhile, Ben Shapiro still wonders. Well, he doesn't wonder. He just Ben Shapiro and his wife never gets wet. Oh, well. But no, down in Polk County, Florida, the Polk County Sheriff's Office announced this past Friday that they took down 160 people in a week-long sting related to prostitution. They framed it, though, and it is appropriately framed, I suppose, as a human trafficking operation. Basically, what they did is they lured people into, and by people, I mean dudes, into offering money in exchange for ficky fic. Sex workers. Operation Fall Hall 2 netted 160 Johns in which they pretended to be sex workers, and people stepped right up and offered various amounts of money, which apparently is illegal now. In exchange for sex with somebody who wasn't really a sex worker. It's the, you know, it's the more modern equivalent of the classic old Vice Squad sting. And they got some interesting characters. They got 26 married guys. Might not be for much longer. They got 15 out-of-state guys. The Polk County Sheriff, Grady Judd, who appears to have a bit of a smart-ass attitude and was, you know, sort of making light of the situation, and didn't seem seemly, but they took down a guy named Jason DePrima. Jason DePrima, it turns out, is a dude who is a deputy police chief from Cartersville, Georgia. Hmm?
He has, DePrima has since resigned from his job at the Cartersville, Georgia Police Department. Sheriff Judd said, if all else fails, he can write a book, How to Lose Your Career in 3 Easy Steps.
Okay. Aren't you clever? Assistant Police Chief DePrima tried to hire an undercover detective posing as a sex worker with $180 and a pack of White Claw, because everybody knows that a girl simply can't resist a six-pack of White Claw. Oh, boy. They also got Keith Nieves, age 24, who's a corrections officer. In the old black and white movie days, he would have been called a screw, you dirty screw, a prison guard at Lake Correctional Institution. He tried to hook up with an undercover detective posing as a prostitute. And 3 Florida school employees were taken down. A computer technician at a local high school who was already on bond for having been accused of having sex with a 15-year-old student from the school got arrested. A math teacher, this guy's creative, Carlos Gonzalez, 34 years old, after he got arrested, he said, well, I was just going to give those 2 girls the money and leave without having sex. That's all. They arrested him, too. A PE teacher from another high school, 26 years old, he tried to pay an undercover detective $40 for something that was deemed to be a sex act. A bellhop from Disney's Coronado Springs Resort got taken down. All told, and this is important, 160 people, 160 guys, got arrested for basically soliciting prostitution. Because prostitution's illegal. And the sheriff did a long diatribe about how the online prostitution industry enables traffickers and allows for the continued victimization of those trafficked. Harumph. Our goal is to identify victims, offer them help, and arrest those who are fueling the exploitation of human beings and those profiting from the exploitation of human beings. You know, I'm pretty... Knowing cops for the way that cops behave, I mean, it's legendary that a lot of cops have run a lot of prostitution operations by occasionally, you know, they'll catch a girl and they'll run her in and they'll then give her a choice. She can play on the team or she can do, you know, she can do a year in county. It is not unheard of. And, of course, at no point in time were there ever any prostitutes, any sex workers involved in this entire operation. But again, 160 dudes got taken down. 0 drag queens. None. Zip, zilch, nada, niente. How about that? But it doesn't slow the wing nuts down a little, even in the least, and they're still out there barking and grunting and you know, those men's rights guys, those weirdos like Ben Shapiro and Joe Rogan and Jordan Peterson and that bunch, they're forever running around grunting about masculinity. I think they spend more time thinking about men than gay guys spend thinking about men. Kind of makes a girl wonder. But that's our opening salvo of morons. But God knows there are plenty more. Oh, look, it's Chick-fil-A.
you know, hate filet.
Right. Oh, but no, back to the other story for just a minute. The Polk County Sheriff's Department apparently used people pretending to be women that they weren't in that sting.
Even if it was some pustle-gutted 25-year veteran of the Polk County Sheriff's Department sitting behind a computer quacking madly away with a mustache and a beard you could strain soup out of, for what he was holding himself out to be online, he was impersonating a woman in Florida, where they've got a don't say gay, don't say trans law. Whatever shall we tell the children, Governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis? I mean, the aforementioned 25-year veteran of the Polk County Sheriff's Department, with his, you know, with his big old puzzle gut hanging out, and can't even see the belt on his trousers, and probably got a little bit of his Jimmy John's sandwich from earlier stuck in his mustache, and he's sitting there typing away. Hey, baby, you want a party? Because I'm guessing there aren't a lot of self-respecting women who would involve themselves in that. But how's that not online drag? And of course the pervs on the other end going, "Oh baby, I'm gonna..." Yeah. Go figure. But, like I said, hate filet. We all know that they despise the LGBTQ community in the past, and probably still do through their various tax-free dodges, support any number of hateful pieces of legislation. For all I know, they probably have a foundation that quietly gives to the Alliance Demeaning Freedom in their endless quest to make us all be good little good little evangelical Christians. And we've talked about how fascist they are. And literally, it is in the birthing notes of fascism that everybody who isn't just exactly the way the fascists want them to be, whether it be in terms of appearance or behavior or sexuality, well, they must be crushed as degenerates. So, you know, when you see or hear of one of these ostensibly intelligent right-wing men's dudes, just remember, everything they're saying has already been said by fascists. When you learn to see, when you learn about fascism, you can find it in a lot more places than might be necessarily obvious. And so we come back to hate filet. I found the story interesting because way back when I still went there, before they decided to pick a side in the Kulturkampf. Well, I loved... Okay, no, not loved. I always felt icky after Chick-fil-A. It's just... Maybe it's all the powdered sugar in the breading or something. I don't know. But I liked their spicy chicken sandwich better than their regular one. But they never had any spicy chicken tenders or chicken nuggets. And I'm like, when are y'all going to get those? Of course, that was like 10, 12 years ago. And, well, I'm apparently not the only one who was a fan of the spicy breading mix. Of course, unpaid product placement. If you want a really good spicy chicken sandwich, the one at Burger King is better by orders of magnitude than the one at Hate Filet and Then there's Popeyes, you know, the top of the heap. Their spicy chicken sandwich make your head sweat. That's a good thing. Back this past Friday, somebody tweeted, grilled spicy deluxe, but still no spicy nuggets. That's fairly anodyne. And somebody at corporate PR social media for Hate Filet, and I'm sure they're Christian, tweeted back, your community will be the first to know if spicy items are added to the permanent menu. Don, your community. Because the guy who tweeted it appears to be black guy. So the Chick-fil-A folks decided that he must be speaking. I really can't sort out the intellectual process here, but instead of seeing Don as an individual who would really like to know, instead of responding, hey, Don, we'll let you know. No, your community. Your community will be the first to know. And suddenly people noticed that tweet, and there's a little bit of a shitstorm. Whose community are you talking about there, Hate Filet? I'm guessing you don't think Don's a member of the LGBTQ plus community, because they're not going to Chick-fil-A anyway. Which community? And after a little while, they want, we know how you people like spicy. Right. And so finally, Hate Filet's home office got involved. And sent out an oopsie. Finally saying to the Today Show, because the Today Show is, you know, right on top of the burning issues of the day. See what I did there? Spicy chicken, burning issue. Never mind. No, I don't deserve a cowbell for that. Don't even try. I won't accept it. And you have to use your Richard Pryor white guy voice for this.
The response was a poor choice of words, but was not intended in any way to be insensitive or disrespectful. We often use the term community in a broader sense to talk about places where we operate restaurants and serve the surrounding community. Yes, that's definitely what we... did I do good, Bob? Yeah.
In the name of Jesus, yes, you did. Wait, Chick-fil-A, Lee in New York, linking stories together, and you get a cowbell for this one. This is great when we take one story and put another story with it, tie it up in a neat little bow. Chick-fil-A sounds like the name of a prostitution organization, Robin. Not going to fight you on that one, Lee. No. And Ron and Raleigh, picking up on the threads, said, I wonder what Ernst Röhm and the boys were up to on the night of the long knives. I think the history would suggest that they were contemplating their manliness. Manly men.
Men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, I had a note from Ron and Raleigh earlier. Ahead of the curve again. Ron says, you know, we've both been ahead of the curve on this subject for quite some time. While I'm not a lawyer and have no legal training, the whole concept of originalism always struck me as bullshit. As a former boss of mine used to say, I may not be a jockey, but but I know horse shit when I smell it. And so lo and behold, and Ron says, the only thing I wonder is why it took so long for an article like this to appear, because it took so long for somebody to write it. But I am proud of the fact that we have deconstructed this crap, and literally years and years ago. There is no originalism. Originalism is garbage. But Paul Rosenberg over at Salon, it's headlined, How Justice Scalia Created Chaos. Originalism is just right-wing ideology in disguise. Berkeley Law School Dean Erwin Chemerinsky on the incoherent, dishonest ideology that has warped the Supreme Court. Because, of course, you can't get on the Supreme Court without sitting in front of the Senate Committee on the Judiciary and burbling and garbling and grunting and barking and squealing loudly, if you're a Republican nominee, about the importance of originalism. And if anybody criticizes originalism, well, you don't understand the Constitution. Constitution's supposed to live the same way as it's supposed to be, because powdered wigs and men who enslave people and wear lace cuffed shirts, pirate puppy shirts, and velvet knee breeches knowed better what would be good for America in 2022. That's because you don't understand. You hate America. You think it ought to be some sort of living document. But I feel like I should probably browse this tome, and I should maybe see about getting the dean on here, Dean Chemerinsky. The book is called Worse Than Nothing, The Dangerous Fallacy of Originalism, and it'll come across a whole lot smarter than anything I've ever said here, because he's a law school dean. And so there's probably all kinds of citations to Supreme Court reporters and whatnot, and law review articles and what have you, all kinds of stuff. But he sat down to an interview, and Dean Chemerinsky said, I think originalism is a very dangerous approach to constitutional law, and in this instance, I think it is really worse than nothing. And then, just as we have pointed out, it was the conservative political movement that drove originalism. The Federalist Society embraced originalism and nurtured a belief in it. And it was simply about who won elections. If Hillary Clinton had won the presidency in 2016, or she had replaced Justices Scalia, Kennedy, and Ginsburg, we wouldn't be talking about originalism today. It would be a fringe theory on the Supreme Court that a group of conservative law professors kept alive. But Trump appointed three conservatives, joining conservatives who were already there, and that is causing originalism to be in the ascendancy. And I recommend the interview. I read it earlier today. And it's worth your time, and if you're interested in things legal, the book might be as well. And you know what? It's kind of a pain in the ass to do, but I'll see if at some point in time I can't get Dean Chemerinsky to join us in conversation. We can talk about things like Hadley versus Baxendale, and I don't know much about Mills, and I don't know much about time, but I do know when it's Miller time, and we can talk about, you know, Lochner and the rule against perpetuities and the things that keep eager young law students up at night.
Hey.
Yeah. Yes, I fully expect to. You know you're going to dine upon a murder hornet in the depths of the hot place for that Egyptian crack, don't you, Kincaid? Said Brother Deacon Asa. I do it just to see if you're paying attention. Irish Dave, well, you got to get a cowbell for this. Does Chick-fil-A sex work feature boneless activity? Oh, I'm going to give you another one. That's just a twofer. Mercy. Mm-hmm. So as you can see, it's you know, we're off to a very nice start this evening, and God, there is so much more. Let's see, then get rid of the Florida sheriff story. You know how we have talked from time to time about how there are, for lack of a better term, moles in our government? Go back to the end of the reign of error back in late 2008, first 19 days of 2009. And we remember, how the loyal Bushies bragged that they had left sleeper cells in the government of the United States. And I'm sure that I'm sure the maggots did the same. Well, one may have popped up, it popped up from among the foliage. Over the weekend, the head of Customs and Border Protection had to answer some unpleasant questions. Because it turned out that the official Customs and Border Protection regional Twitter account had decided to retweet some really noxious, offensive, ugly right-wing blather from none other than Minister of Propaganda, former Stephen Miller. Remember him, little Nazi that he was. The official CBP Twitter account for the West Texas region retweeted, and sometimes it seems so positively simple that a tweet can become news, but that's the world we live in the early years of the third decade of the 21st century of the common era. From Johannes Gutenberg to Twitter. But Stephen Miller is a really ugly fascist. And even, even his own family says so, pointing out that had the policies he wanted to see enacted in the United States been in force when his ancestors fled to America, they would have been kept out, and there would have been no Stephen Miller in the MAGA administration. Among the two tweets, Stephen Miller tweeted, "Violent criminals lay waste to our communities undisturbed, while the immense power of the state is arrayed against those whose only crime is dissent. The law has been turned from a shield to protect the innocent into a sword to conquer them." Why, whatever could you be talking about, Stephen? Oh, it looks like he was tweeting it at an audience of one. That or trying to get a guest gig on, testicle toasting Tuckio Rose Carlson's program, or maybe Frau Ingram over there, or who knows, Megan Santa Claus's White Kelly over on Sirius XM. Last I checked, January 6, 2021, some pretty violent criminals did, in fact, lay waste to one of our communities. Because one of our communities, and I'm not talking about somewhere, I'm not talking about a community that wants some spicy Chick-fil-A nuggets. I'm talking about the community that is Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. Well, the head of Customs and Border Patrol said, protection, please. totally unacceptable and disappointing that any CBP Twitter account was used to retweet offensive, unauthorized comment. We've removed the comment and will deactivate the account. The Office of Professional Responsibility will investigate. This must not happen again. Fire the little maggot mole who did the retweet and be done. It may be whose only crime is dissent. Maybe he didn't say who he meant, but you think maybe the individual he meant might be sort of orange in color? Might have a comb over that requires two full cans of Aquanet to put in place every morning. Remember, Iwanka told us that his hair takes 2 hours every day. But having retweeted that one little fascist dweeb's tweets, they weren't done. There was another one. The media's greatest power is its ability to frame what is a dire national crisis, e.g. cops are racist, some are 20, and what is not. Biden's eradication of our border means we are no longer a republic. He's ended nearly 250 years of constitutional government. The media is silent.
You know, maybe the media is silent because that's all an entire fucking lie. Oops, I said the F-bomb, sorry. I know, billable Rick.
Stop telling us what cowbells you won't accept.
Well, I won't, and you can't make me. So that is one of the circulating memes of white wing world these days.
We don't have a southern border anymore. The southern border is gone. It just disappeared one night, and Joe Biden came along and took it away somewhere. It's probably in the Mariana Trench now or something. I always like Marianne better than Ginger.
So, we're no longer a republic. I mean, that doesn't even follow from the previous statement. You have to have a Mexican border or else you're not a republic? Where is that in the original work by Plato? You know, the one that was called The Republic. It gets so tiresome. They're so endlessly stupid and so willing to swallow whatever fascist drivel is vomited down their throats like a mama bird, you know, feeding a ground-up earthworm to its babies. Well, there went dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, and we got an early start on the Central. Then again, maybe the neo-maxi zoom dweeby is grunting because he's under subpoena from the DOJ. They'd like to talk to Stephen about the Save America PAC and his willing participation in spreading the big lie about fake electors and. And then the various and sundry forms of communication between Miller and, a whole lot of anybody's who's anybody's in the insurrection movement that resulted in a terrorist attack on the capital of the United States and constitutional governance itself on the 6th day of January, 2021. And the CBP went ahead and said, oh, by the way, Miller's tweets do not reflect the values of this administration and our work to rebuild a humane, orderly, and secure immigration system. Because at the end of the day, that's what they're pissed off about. The maggots are mad that little babies are not being kidnapped and torn away from their mother's breast anymore. Imagine that's the hill you want to fight on. And claim that you're worried about fetuses at the same time. Well, if nothing else, you know, I guess they get a star for chutzpah.
I'm worried, Ron and Raleigh says. This swine, meaning Stephen Miller, is now raising a child. His wife is as disgusting as he is. Someone should send Child Protective Services to see to that child's welfare.
But no one will. And in the end, he will grow up as his parents intended him.
Maybe. Maybe not. But the goal is for him to grow up just as hateful and just as toxic as his vile, vulgar mommy and daddy are. Yeah.
See what I mean about it being a right busy Moran Monday? Hey, let's go to Utah. Or not.
You know, again, a gentle reminder that the right wing is all worried about the Chirons these days. And groomers and whatnot. Oh, well. It turns out that there's a lawmaker out behind the Zion Curtain. He's in Utah government. And at the same time, he's a lawyer for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Well, there was a little problem. A member of the church whose name was Paul Adams, in a most Christian manner, of course, sexually abused his two little girls. And it the revelation came on a tip line there was a call log that went to a law firm that represented the church, and the lawyer and legislature, Republican State Representative Merrill F. Nelson, took the call from the Mormon bishop, you know, bishop, just like Willard Romney is a bishop in the Mormon church. And over a 2-year period, lawyer Nelson had multiple conversations with two bishops of the Mormon church who knew that Paul Adams had been sexually abusing his own daughters. And according to the Associated Press report, a transcript of the deposition and excerpts of the call log were attached to a legal filing in the Arizona Court of Appeals made by lawyers for the plaintiffs. Three of Adams's children are battling the church, widely known as the Mormon Church, for access to records the church insists are confidential. Imagine that, being so rich and so powerful that you can look at the state and say, no, you can't have these records about our church trying to shut down an investigation and keep silent about the church's complicity because we're the church and you're not. The report continues, the church took the case to the Court of Appeals after a Cochise County judge ruled in favor of the victims. You know, the children who were sexually abused by their own most pious daddy. The criminal case was, the case, was on the way to being tried in a state court there in Utah.
And then Paul Adams decided to save the taxpayers of the state of Utah the cost of a trial and unalived himself. Well, back to Lawyer Nelson. Lawyer Nelson had a little chit-chat with Bishop John Herod. And the Associated Press says that Nelson told the bishop he could be sued if he reported, and the instruction by counsel not to report Paul to the authorities was the law in Arizona and had nothing to do with church doctrine. And so the bishops withheld vital information about the sexual abuse of minor children for the sake not of the children, but of the church. Because that's what matters. And back last month, the AP reported on this earlier, and it turns out there's probably a long list of cases in which elders of the Mormon Church were well aware that the children in their church were being sexually molested, sexually abused, sexually assaulted, and did nothing. You know, at most, if they decided they wanted to, the elders could excommunicate rapey daddy. Didn't do that either. No, of course not. But sort of as an undercurrent to this entire story is this disgusting piece of information. The state of Arizona has something they call clergy penitent privilege. And while Arizona law says that the members of the clergy have to report child neglect and sexual abuse, there's a get-out-of-jail-free card where the church can say, no, this was done during a spiritual confession, and thereby keep it locked down and hidden from the light of day. Makes me want to vomit. Those three plaintiffs should own a lot of real estate in Arizona, and particularly Utah. That big fancy temple should be theirs. I mean, they can turn it into a Chuck E. Cheese's for all I care. Why do religious institutions continue to exist when it gets proven time after time after time after time that they are nothing but the ecclesiastical equivalent of the rape rooms that we were told about back during Bush War II? Maybe I should have saved that for prayer meeting Wednesday, but, well, you know, and by the way, we know I'm not going to be here for a portion of this week, right? It's part of the reason that it's ever so important that I get bills paid so that I can leave and go out and do some good work on behalf of Cold River Mountain Watch. I'll probably be on the road for prayer meeting Wednesday. Pretty sure of it. But nonetheless, we do have a monstrous fundraising goal, and it's been so hard to keep things going, and it is such, well, it wears on my being. If we could take it down some, that would be great. We managed to managed to take it down by a little over a day Friday, and that was so tremendous. And thank you to everybody who participated in that. It, we need to bring it down some more, if we could, so that I can go away from here and not be half freaked out worrying about what comes next. But that having been said, here at the beginning of the second hour of the program, God, we really do have a ton of noxious stuff. You remember I was looking at the photo, and for a minute there, I thought it was young Maddie Madison Cawthorn, but it wasn't. These little right-wing podcasts have just become, well, they've propagated like mushrooms after a warm spring rain. And so now we've got a new young conservative. His name is Alec, A-L-E-K, Scarlatos. And he's running for Congress in a district in Oregon that is competitive. And well, he's just a young man, and young men will be young men. I mean, that's just how. Sometimes they're just, and they just talk about things. Alex Scarlatos is 29 years old. He used to be in the Oregon National Guard. And back in 2015, he achieved celebrity status because he was the one who helped to stop a terrorist on a train bound for Paris. What? Huh? Just a second. No, we're still streaming. Nobody's telling me the program's disappeared. But no, back in 2015, the terrorist with a, what, he had a knife or something? And, well, Alex Scarlatos is the guy from the Oregon National Guard who helped to stop the attacker, and he got a lot of fame and positive publicity out of it. And out of that, he's run for Congress, and he's run for Douglas County, Oregon County Commission. And now, he is facing off against a Democrat by the name of Val Hoyle. Val Hoyle is currently the commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and they're running for the Oregon 4th Congressional District seat that is currently held by Democrat Pete DeFazio. And it's gonna be a fight. Well, back in 2018, he showed up on a podcast, Alex Scarlatos did, with another dude bro. And by the way, that 4th Congressional District takes in Eugene and almost all of Southwest Oregon. And back in 2018, there was a Clint Eastwood movie that dramatized the train attack where Alex Scarlatos helped stop the killers. And he did so in conjunction with a former Air Force staff sergeant by the name of Spencer Stone. They went on a podcast to promote the film. The podcast was called Drinkin' Bros. And for 45 long minutes, the dude bro host talked with the two other dudes about the movie, and then they moved into things that interest young guys, I guess, namely the sex lives of celebrities. And Scarlatos read some of his messages from Tinder. Oops, we've done that here. But what we haven't done here is the host, Ross Patterson, said to Alex Scarlatos, who is really, no kidding, a candidate for Congress. Oh, he and Clanny Oakley are going to, and Marginal Trailer Queen are going to get along so good if he wins. The host said, "You ever thought if you choked someone and killed them in bed, what would happen?" And Alex Scarlatos, laughing, said, "Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah." And then they went on and continued a lengthier extemporization on the idea of women dying while having sex. And the other co-star, Stone, Spencer Stone, said, I'm thinking about sitting in on a trial where a fella's charged with choking his girlfriend to death during sex. She consented." And then, because this is just so funny, Alex Scarlatos, a Republican candidate for Congress, talked about a case out of Florida in 2017 where a guy was charged with choking his girlfriend to death, suffocating her, and went on to talk about her suffocating while performing oral sex. And the congressional candidate said, "You know, he wasn't convicted, and he got off in more ways than one." Yeah, he's a... And he wasn't in another podcast. He said, "You know, I had to move. I lived in Roseburg. I had to go somewhere else just to be able to date. There's literally two attractive women in my town." Well, he got called out on it, and suddenly he's filled with remorse because, you know, he's a man now. He's 29. He's not some punk-ass 27-year-old. But he's a Republican, so naturally he issued the classic Republican non-apology apology.
"You know, looking back at the comments I made as a 24-year-old who just left the Army, I'm disappointed. I apologize if I offended anyone."
You know, that's the thing with the Republicans. They always want to keep talking after the "I apologize" part. "I apologize, period.
If I offended anyone."
Because he doesn't want to apologize to the people he didn't offend. He doesn't want to apologize to the people who found it to be just really, really knee-slapping funny to talk about choking women to death during sex. And, you know, he's just a healthy, red-blooded American male.
And, he liked some pictures on the Instagram of, like, a 17-year-old girl who's wearing a string bikini bottom and a sweatshirt, and she's holding the sweatshirt up to display her flat tummy.
Dozens of photos of teenage girls. Alex Scarlatos has clicked a little heart button, too. Most of them, you know, a lot of them are girls in two-piece bathing suits, bikinis, or midriff-bearing crop tops. Two of them were 15.
Well, he's not going to be pushed around by the Capitol Chronicle out in Oregon, by God. No, he's not. "To imply that a follower a like of social media influencers on Instagram with over 100,000 followers is inappropriate is absurd."
And
And then, oh, God, they're so clever. When he ran previously in 2020, he had $93,000 left over in his campaign account. And then he created a nonprofit that was supposed to advocate for veterans and transferred the money to the nonprofit. And then when he decided to run again this year, he transferred the money from the veterans nonprofit to his campaign account. The Federal Election Commission said, that's okay. That's a refund. Oh, Jesus. Well, here's the horrifying part. As of the close of the most recent reporting period, Alex Scarlatos has raised $2.57 million for his race in the 4th Congressional District of Oregon. And this is the best that the Republican Party of Oregon can put up. Meanwhile, Val Hoyle has raised $1.12 million. You know, more than $1 million behind Scarlatos. You can almost imagine Scarlatos saying, you know, I'd like to choke her. But you got to give it to the Republican Party. They know their base. Would you be surprised if you found out that maybe he was a free percenter or an oath keeper or a proud boy? I'm not saying he is. I don't know that he is. But he damn sure fits the demographic. Oh, he certainly does. And meanwhile, back to Florida, where Julie Hoover, age 39, was a teacher at Point of Grace Christian School in Perry, Florida. And Julie Hoover, the teacher at Point of Grace Christian School, I guess she was trying to display the loving, kind grace of Jesus Christ or something to one of her young male students when, according to court documents, she decided to twerk on him. She's been charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor and a second felony charge of an authority figure soliciting or engaging in lewd conduct with a student. But what about the drag queens? She also got arrested for sexting with an 18-year-old high school senior. Point of Grace Christian Academy. And we know the long history of Christian academies in the South. Issued a statement. Mrs. Hoover is a former teacher with Point of Grace Christian. We will not provide further information on her employment or departure from our school. The Taylor County Sheriff's Office informed us of the allegations against Ms. Hoover, and we have cooperated with the investigation. Out of respect for the judicial process, we will not comment any further at this time. Out of respect for the bullshit. Upon advice of our insurance company lawyers, we will not offer any further comment at this time. Anybody told Ron Monkey Up Duplantis about this? I mean, he loves him some Christian education. Sure he does. And, yeah, funny, we haven't even gotten to the ongoing saga of Nitwit Nero, the missing... The missing 38 folders full of classified documents. But videos are emerging showing Nitwit Nero's minions
taking boxes of stuff to other golf properties.
Oh, my heavenly days.
Jeff Tiedrich over on Twitter showed a photo of just exactly such behavior, a jet on the tarmac, and minions carrying stuff, and said, and this was Saturday that he tweeted it, holy fucking shit. On May 6th, 2021, NARA, you know, the archives, asked Donald Trump to return missing documents. On May 9th, 2021, Donald Trump was filmed leaving Florida with dozens of boxes, bound for Bedminster. Let me repeat this. Holy fucking shit. Why isn't Bedminster being searched right now? Well, let's say it again. Dig her up! Dig her right up. No telling what's in there. And you know, that not to get all blue and on or anything, but almost begins to look like maybe she needed to go just to provide a reason for the hole in the ground. But there's a growing call for other places to be searched. Videos did circulate over the weekend. And, earlier today, on my filthy morning habit, which I did not watch, because I just cannot bring myself to participate in the grief orgy over that welfare lady in England. But they did talk about it a little bit. I'm going to have to do it on a... hold on. Do it on a different platform. Here, this is better. Here we go.
Former federal district judges Barbara Jones is a Clinton appointee, and Thomas Griffith, who is a George W. Bush appointee. The Trump legal team is suggesting retired federal district court judge and Reagan appointee Raymond Deary. The other, former Deputy Attorney General in Florida, Paul Huck Jr. It comes as the Justice Department gave Judge Aileen Cannon until Thursday to restore the government's access to classified materials seized at Mar-a-Lago. Otherwise, the DOJ says it plans to appeal to a higher court in the interest of national security. Let's bring in NBC News Justice and Intelligence Correspondent Ken Delanian. And Ken, how long can they go back and forth disagreeing on who the special master is? And can this DOJ appeal overrule all of that?
Good morning, Mika. It could, and today's an important day because the judge has given the Trump side until 10 a.m. this morning to respond with a brief to the Justice Department's appeal and their request that she stay part of her order. In terms of the special masters, it's really interesting. There were three sort of non-controversial candidates, former federal judges. And then there's this one that the Trump side put forward, Paul Huck, who is not a former federal judge. He is a member of the Federalist Society, and his wife was appointed to the 11th Circuit by President Trump. The 11th Circuit is the circuit that would hear any appeal in this case. So a lot of legal experts are saying he has a conflict of interest. But the other person put forward by the Trump side, Raymond Deary, some people are saying the DOJ should take that name because he's a respected former federal judge in New York. But you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, this special master situation could become moot, because what the Justice Department had made clear in their request to the judges, what they really care about here are the 100 classified documents that they seized at Mar-a-Lago. They're happy. I mean, they're not happy. They disagree with the special master idea, but they're willing to allow a special master to review the thousands of other documents seized, from including Trump's health records and tax records. But they argue that these 100 classified documents should not be viewed by a special master. They're already in a special room right now, and they're saying that it's a matter of national security, that they need access to those right now as part of their FBI investigation. And the damage assessment that the DNI was doing into whether sources and methods were compromised, that's on hold right now because of this judge's order. So we await the Trump side's response to that at 10 a.m.
Hey, Ken, good morning. It's Jonathan. A question that I get a lot and have received a lot in the last month or so since the Mar-a-Lago search is one that I'm now going to pose to you, is that we know that the FBI searched this property. Donald Trump, of course, has lots of other properties. And people are wondering, like, well, why hasn't there been a search of Bedminster that we know of? Why hasn't there been one of Trump Tower? Why hasn't there been one of his other golf courses across the country? Walk us through what would require, how that would happen, how DOJ would give the okay, what they would need to give the okay to do one of these other searches, and is there any suggestion that they're working on it?
It's a great question, Jonathan, and obviously we don't know the inner workings of this investigation, but what's required is more than just a theory that some evidence might be at a place. They need actual hard evidence, and in the case of this Mar-a-Lago search, they had witnesses who were telling them that not only was there classified information there, but that they were misled, that they were lied to, essentially, by the Trump side. And that's all blacked out in the affidavit, but we're aware that it exists. And they use that to go to a judge and say, Judge, we need to do a search. A search is a very intrusive thing, right? You're trampling someone's Fourth Amendment rights, but for a good reason, because you have evidence that there is the evidence of a crime is at this location. Absent that, like, for example, there's a social media theory going around. There's some video of Trump aides loading boxes onto a private jet heading for Bedminster. And I have to say, I mean, when I first saw that on Twitter over the weekend, I thought, oh, another conspiracy theory. The more you look at it, the more it's pretty disturbing. I mean, these banker boxes are the same kinds of boxes that the classified documents were found in. But absent any other kinds of evidence, they would need witnesses telling them, yes, there were classified documents in those boxes and they were taken to Bedminster. They're not just going to do it based on a video or on a theory, Jonathan.
All right, NBC News Justice Correspondent Ken Delanian, thank you very much. Time now for a look.
Yeah, I mean, on a theory. They're not going to do it on a theory.
But we won't know nothing until she gets dug up.
No singing, not even Elvis. If anybody wants to give me a cowbell for that, yeah, I'll accept that one. A little bit of info. Thank you, Roger, on the district there that where Alex Scarlatos is running. In 2020, Scarlatos lost to DeFazio by around 25,000 votes. After last year's redistricting process, the voter registration edge for Democrats in the 4th is even larger this election cycle, meaning Scarlatos will face longer odds despite facing a non-incumbent Democrat in the general election. I hope it plays as you suggest. I really do. I don't need. We don't need Clanny Oakley and Jim Jacket off Jordan and Marginal Trailer Queen to have a. And Matt Gaetz to have a new playmate. Oh, there's a Matt Gaetz story. Thank you. Thank you, Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you so much. There's a $100 challenge on the table. There's also a $50 challenge on the table from Ralphs. So that would take care of one day's broadcasting, and that would be huge. Oh, that would be so huge. Thank you. Thank you both. And, you know, we've got a half a program to maybe meet that in. And that would mean that we were funded for, let's see, 100. Yeah, that would do a whole day's broadcasting and get us into the beginning of last week for funding the program. Thank you both so much. I hope people will respond in kind. I do. I so do. Darlene in Connecticut says, but Pizzagate. But Vice President Harris and second Jan Imhoff's daughter Ella bared her breast in a fashion show. Impeach them! Oh, the flag is falling. My friends, what will we tell the children? Yeah. I don't know. We'll figure that. We'll figure that out, Dead Rush. After we figure out what to tell the children who were raped by the. Never mind. You get the idea.
Drag queens, ooga brooga brooga.
I said there's more Matt Gaetz news. It just gets worse. Thank you to our pal Theo for sharing this along. Matt Gaetz, on his official blue checkmark Twitter account, posted a photograph of his opponent's 12-year-old neurodivergent son at a health fair. And said it was a campaign event. There is no bottom. There's a picture of a Gaetz rally. Keep Gaetz fighting. Might be better off if it might be a more accurate slogan to keep Gaetz fucking, you know, little girls. And the other photo is not a campaign event at all, and the little guy's just asleep. He's just taking a nap. But Matt Gaetz, who, of course, you know, supports, I mean, he cares about the children, but not if he has a chance to slime one of them for the purpose of advancing his own filthy political aspirations. Emphasis on the part of aspirations that involves ass. And on and on and on it goes. And, I don't even know how to cover this story. This is, I mean, the method and means are not common, but goddamn, the end result is. A woman by the name of Karina Castro. From San Carlos, California, was dating a guy named Jose Rafael Solano Landeta. And he was the father of her one-year-old. She had two kids. Her two kids were ages 7 and 1. Karina Castro worked as a delivery driver. And back in April, things just got too bad with the boyfriend. And so she went to the cops and she took out a restraining order against him. And then this past Thursday morning, as she walked out of her San Carlos apartment, Jose Rafael Solano Landeta beheaded her with a sword. I'm sure there must be a press release from the NRA somewhere. See, if she'd only had a gun! And her family's speaking up and saying, you know, all the warning signs were there. She
She told law enforcement that Landetta had put a target on her. Her family said she was an amazing girl. She was a great mom, the most caring person I've known. She always had my back. Her grandmother said she was an amazing woman, very stubborn, determined to raise her daughters on her own. And the boyfriend is now, I guess, he's been arrested and he's being held held in jail. A sword. And no, I'm guessing he was not crazy. No. God Almighty. But following up on the Nitwit Nero story with the boxes and the golf courses, news came out this afternoon via the New York Times that at least 40 subpoenas, have gone out for minions of Nitwit Nero, specifically related to the fake electors scam. And the FBI came along and picked up the cell phones of Boris Epstein, the Russian-American political strategist. That's the term we're using these days, I guess. They came and got his phone, as did Mike. They got Mike Romans, who did Oppo research for Nitwit Nero from 2017 to 2018. He was the one who wound up being the one who passed the list of fake electors to Vice President Mike Pence, and that geek. That sounds like a bit of an escalation. Dan Scavino, who quite often, any time on Twitter that you saw a tweet that was not full of misspells and used words bigger than we know Nitwit Nero knew. Dan Scavino has been subpoenaed. Bernie Carrick has got a subpoena. He helped run the war room in the Willard Hotel on January 6th. They're looking into Save America PAC. And you gotta wonder if he's beginning to sweat a little bit. And God knows, his pettifoggers, you know, the team referred to as Legally Brunette, Alina Haba, who now has gotten her hair done to look like Ivanka my daddy Trump Kushner, and the other lawyer, Chris, what's her name? Yeah, she looks like melanoma now. They're filing some bizarre stuff. And claiming that their pleadings are inadequate. They leave something to be desired. Because they're now arguing that national defense papers were his personal property. That argument is without merit, to say the very least.
And you know from the previous clip that they're trying. And look, if Aileen Cannon gets to make the call, she'll pick the guy who's the husband of the judge on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. Because bear in mind, he will get paid. And that's all part of the grift. Meanwhile, up in Michigan, the co-chair of the Michigan Republican Party is a person by the name of Michonne Maddock. And she's decided to go to war with Pete Buttigieg. You know, on 9/11. What she did on Sunday is she shared a tweet from the Republican National Committee, you know, headed by Ronna Romney McDaniel, in which Buttigieg was talking about how California has plans to ban new gas-powered vehicle sales by 2035. New. The used market will still be viable. And saying that the United States needs to move in the direction of electric vehicles. And there's a larger discussion to be had about that, about whether or not hooking more cars to coal-fired power grids is necessarily a good idea, because, of course, coal-fired electricity is the dirtiest, single dirtiest form of electric generation in the world. But Michonne Maddock tweeted the video and said, "We are so blessed this weak little girl moved to Michigan. Looks like he's bringing all his California dreaming here with him." Lavora Barnes is chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. She said, "Oh, we'll fundraise on this, but I'm not responding to homophobic crazy." Weak little girl. You know, one, it's misogynistic as fuck, and two, it's homophobic as hell. It's who they are. Each and every time, it is who they are. And I don't understand people who get, you know, excited by this kind of garbage. But I guess that's who Republicans are. They get turned on by people being homophobic and shitty to other people. What about the drag queens? Today in today in criminal justice, how about this? Back in a woman from New York just got 4 months in the stir for interfering with the crew of a flight from Dallas to Los Angeles. Her behavior was bad enough that they had to divert the flight to Sky Harbor at Phoenix because of what she did, engaging in intimidating behavior. They took her off the plane in Phoenix. Both of the women assaulted a passenger and then used racial slurs when somebody else asked them to stop. and Kelly Pichardo, the woman in question, spat at another passenger who was trying to record their behavior. She'll have to pay $9,200 in restitution to American Airlines. She'll do 3 years of supervised release following her prison sentence. And she engaged in criminal behavior. But is it okay if I point out that it would be great if there were more people who were involved in the terrorist attack on the capital of the United States on January 6, 2021, we're doing 3 years hard time and 3 years probation instead of getting a slap on the wrist and being told to go and sin no more. Oh, and speaking of 9/11, another little something that I noticed, this was bizarre. I saw a photograph on social media. Thank you. I'm pretty sure this is one of the ones that our buddy John in Central PA sent along. Holy cow. Well, where'd it go? Well, I'll describe it to you. Upon winning one of those golf tournaments, I presume the one at Bedminster, the winner was presented with a trophy. And put in a side-by-side picture. The trophy was weird looking. This was, this was that Mohammed bin Bonesaw tournament. And it wasn't like it. Well, it didn't look like the claret jug from the Royal and Ancient over in Mirioldi, UK. It didn't look like what you get if you win the. It's not like the green jacket you get if you win the Masters or what you get when you win the PGA Championship or the U.S. Open. This was a piece of black metal canted at a strange angle, and it was sort of ribbed, and it had an uneven shape at the top, and you could have looked at it for 100 years without context and said, well, that's just kind of tacky. But the part that gave me the holy shit was when the picture of the golfer holding the trophy was set next to a picture of the ruins of the World Trade Center. It looked like a sculptural version of that last piece of the Trade Center framework standing at a tormented angle, you know, and about to come down. That's our partner in peace, Mohammed bin Bonesaw. Charming, isn't it? Great heavenly days. And by the way, just while we're checking in on the maggots, Louis Asparagus Gohmert went to Miami, and he greeted one of the January 6th convicts when she was released from jail after serving her modest sentence. Yeah, Louis Asparagus Gohmert went to Miami and took a certificate suitable for framing and presented it to Simone Gold,
and gave her an American flag that had been flown over the Capitol. You know, that's an all-day job. They just stand there running flags up and pulling them back down and folding them up, running them up, pull it back down. Yeah, a flag that flew over the Capitol. Yeah, he gave, Louis Asparagus Gohmert gave a terrorist an American flag that had flown over the Capitol. And I'm proud to live in America where it li- never mind, it's, yeah. Yeah, that's it. Serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Ralph's just sent along this, so. Henrik Stenson won the Trump National Live Tournament, whatever. The Swedish dude decided he would take Mohammed bin Bonesaw's money, including a reported signing bonus of $50 million. He was going to be the Ryder Cup champion, but they stripped him of the job when he decided to sign on with a murderer. And, yeah, there he is with his trophy that looks disturbingly like the ruins of the World Trade Center. There's no bottom. I'm telling you, there is no bottom. I got nothing for you, Ron and Raleigh. Ron says the show is repeating. I'm not seeing anything from anyone saying there's a problem with the stream. I trust that there aren't. Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa, you get a murder hornet too. That's all I'm going to say about that. Let's run over to the phones. And please, y'all, there's $150 worth of challenge money on the table. Don't let this challenge go by. We are, and I don't say this, I don't, you know, we exist on a month-to-month basis and have for nearly 20 years. But this is as close as we've ever come these last couple of months to everything just going away. And it's frightening. So there's $150 worth of challenges. That would take care of one day's programming from back at the beginning of the month, and here we are almost at the halfway point. Don't let this challenge just bounce harmlessly off the rim. Hey, Scott. What's up?
Oh.
Stop that.
I just like making that noise. I don't know why. Well, do you ever look at Quora, Q-U-O-R-A?
I have from time to time.
I have more fun with those people. For those who don't know what it is, it's a website, and people post questions. Some of them are pretty good questions. Some of the answers are just priceless. But I found out about this from Philip Proctor, one of the two surviving members of Firesign Theater about a year and a half ago. And I just, it's just hugely entertaining. The question that I responded to yesterday, how would you describe Trump starting from when he was born? And here's what I wrote. Trump himself, along with his apologists and enablers in and out of office, seemed to cast him in some sort of messianic light. Too bad a 20th century King Herod wasn't around in 1946. He might well have spared us, the rest of us, from a huge, seemingly endless ass ache. Is that a pretty good response to a question like that?
That's not bad at all. That's right up there with that meme from last week of, where are we going today, Mr. Peabody? Well, Sherman, we're firing up the Wayback Machine and going back to give Fred Trump a condom.
Yes, there you go, a ribbed one. flavored. No, I don't think flavored would have to come into it. But how the hell are you? How's your Monday unfolding?
Monday has not been bad at all. The weekend was just a sodden mess. All it does is... You know, and I know when I complain about rain in central Appalachia, there are people all over the country going, oh, stop. We'd like to have some, thank you. But apparently it's a thing where when y'all get a La Nina out there, we get soaked here.
That's a Mexican joint. The chain of La Nina is a Mexican joint out here. They, with outstanding tacos, I want to tell you.
Yes, open, yes, open of course 24. It is. Of course it is.
I don't know. Pardon me. Pardon me.
But, it's kind of funny. I'm sure you've heard it before, you know. You know, the sound of rain on a metal roof is so soothing. And it can be, and we've got a metal roof here. It can be a lovely little sound, but not when the rain's coming down so hard it sounds like somebody's pouring a bucket of BBs on your roof. I mean, I woke up in the middle of the night and I didn't even look at my phone to see what time it was. I did, because I know if you look at your phone, it's harder to get back to sleep. And so I just turned, but I, because it was like. For what felt like an hour, and it's like, let up.
Make that noise again. I like it. Didn't James Brown have a song or one of those songs from the 60s? One of those soul songs?
No, I think you're thinking of Paul McCartney and Uncle Albert, Admiral, whatever.
No, no.
You know, where it's drrt, 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 and that's the chorus. Drrt, drrt. I think that was back. That was back in Sir Paul's dope smoking days.
Oh, it was more than dope. They were into hallucinogenics by that time. Maybe it wasn't James Brown, but it was one of the singers of that era in that style. And it was something about a man.
It's a man's world?
It might have been. But it...
I don't recall a drrt, drrt in there, but, you know, if you say so, I'm not going to fight.
All right. Well, no, I'm not. I just make it one more time and make go for threesies.
Drrt.
Ah, I love it. I love it. I want that to be my.
Well, you showed up here making weird noises, so you know fair's fair.
No, I was just coughing. I think. Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me hit my NBC cough switch. Just a minute.
I hit mine for you.
Yeah, in the old NBC studios, in the O&Os, the announcers weren't allowed to touch any of the equipment. They had an engineer who ran the commercials and the records and stuff. But they did have a box with a monitor volume in the studio and a cough switch. That's why there was a little label next to it said cough switch. And that's what I need. I need one of those little NBC boxes. So anyway, I just, I don't know what to tell you about. Do you have a counter on any of your equipment that you can consult to see the number of people out there at any given time? You ought to if you don't.
No, that does not exist.
Because I mean,
and frankly, I don't want to know.
See, that's a problem, though.
No, it isn't.
You've got to, and I'll put on my consultant hat for a minute. I would think that it's vitally important to know the your audience. I mean, because... If for no other reason than to say, if everybody listening right now gave a dollar, we'd have X number of dollars, and we'd be that much closer to the fundraising goal.
Because this is a personal philosophy thing with me that goes way, 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 way back. I owe the same degree of effort whether there are 10 people out there or 10 million. We've not gotten anywhere near the 10 million part. But I can't, This is kind of intense. I know it just sounds like, you know, oh, anybody could do this. They can't, and you've worked in it, and you know. And it does me no good in trying to do the best job I know how to do to sit here and wonder, oh, why did listener number 514 suddenly disappear? What did I say?
Well, I didn't mean that. I meant just for the purposes of saying at any given time, you know, wouldn't be a heavy lift for, you know, a handful of individuals if everybody listening now would give a buck. You know, that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that.
But I don't even think that works. I mean, we've done that. I mean, I've used every kind of metric I can think of to make it clear how easy it is to keep this little operation going. And it doesn't seem to make much of a difference.
Well,
I mean, Jesus, if it, literally, you know, you can drop an Abe Lincoln easy at Starbucks. But
oh, you can't get in the door without having $5 to give them.
And when I'm talking about a radio program that's almost 20 years old, that runs on that a $10 subscription is the functional equivalent of a half a stick of Wrigley's Double Mint. I mean, that's profound. A half of a McDonald's hamburger? Probably not. It's not even half.
Well, and the only reason I bring any of this up is since I know a little about radio and formatics and audience and research and all that stuff, I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm trying to assist you.
No, I understand. I understand. But
it just troubles me.
But it does not do me any good to have a counter in the corner of my computer screen going click click.
All right, well, don't have one then. I'm just throwing that out there.
I mean, I get every now and then I get a little piece of information from Brother Deacon Asa because he does watch that stuff. But I don't want to know.
Well, see, this is where I put on my consultant or my programmer's hat, because if it's all about analyzing the situation. And the situation exists now that we're into, what, the 12th day of September? And the fundraising needs to happen on a day-by-day basis. And if it's not happening, then it needs to be looked at, and you need to get a figure out. It's like Apollo 13. When the oxygen tank blew up, you had people back in mission control who did a workaround against a horrendously horrible situation and got the three people back more or less safe and sound, and then redesigned the equipment so that moving forward, we may have other problems, but we won't be having that one again. And that's the frustrating part about doing analytics. The answer, it's like a math problem. God knows I sucked at math.
Well, I've got my visor and my little monkey paws out, and I've got my pencil, and I'm licking. And
Well, be careful you don't puncture your tongue there, because...
Yeah, or put an eye out.
If the point is too sharp, the little monkey can't drink orange juice for a week because he's punctured his little monkey tongue.
Tang, the drink of the astronauts. The drink the astronauts took to the moon. Yes. You brought up this Apollo 13, and then we're orange juice, and we're Tang. Nobody else is doing this.
I know. But what I'm saying is I've sometimes racked my brain trying to figure out what the deal is. And
I know there are things I could do. I could, for instance, go to video. And that's its own, and we've talked about it for years, but the bottom line is, I'm a radio girl, okay?
Yeah, and I don't
like video. I mean, I put pictures up of myself from time to time. You want to see what I look like? There it is. But just to have a camera pointing at me and me having to have in the back of my head, don't pick your nose, Robin, don't pick your nose, Robin, it's not ladylike, Robin, don't pick your nose. No. And it's like knowing how many people are listening at any given time does not help me do a better quality program. And that's what I'm concerned with. I'm concerned with the quality. I'm concerned with building a program every day that is different every day. And, you know, if I had a $50,000 public relations budget, I'd be, you know, I'd have a PR flack who was out there pitching me to all and sundry. Yeah, hell, they'd probably get me on Alex Jones, and me and Alex could talk about how the frogs are turning gay and the monkey jellyfish hybrids of old, the wet markets of old Kowloon. Do we really want them in this community? I mean, you know what? The sad thing is there's a handful of people out there going, yeah, I'd kind of like to hear from those freaks. That'd be funny.
Well, okay.
But I'm sure that's not why you called.
Well, no, wait a minute. What is with my voice? Wait a minute.
I don't know, Marge Simpson. What is with your voice? You're sounding a little Marge-ish there.
Yeah, Jesus. All right, let me just take a sip of coffee. You all chat amongst yourselves for a moment. Because I do have an ultimate point. Wait a minute.
Well, I'll go for the water, you know. A speech therapist friend of mine told me that in any vocal performance space, your best bet is room temperature water.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Fish piss in that. Like
it. No, that wasn't. Well, I'm sure that's true in some places. Okay, I just what the hell is that?
That was my water bottle.
Oh, has it got that little spring-loaded? Clip so that if you knock it over, it doesn't spill. It's like
no, you guys. This is old school. It's a metal bottle. It's a metal insulated bottle with a screw top, and it's got a little. Hear it? It's got a little belt loop.
Oh.
So you can.
Something.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I just. So if the problem isn't the consistency of funding on a part of the entire audience, that may be a problem. I mean, the fact that there's a handful of people that seem to be doing the heaviest lifting, and what's going on with the rest of the people, and that's, I don't even know how you figure out what that is. If that's part of the issue, the content on any given day could determine what's going on with listenership and support. It just frustrates the hell out of me that the potential of this program is being missed, and sometimes it sounds like the very future of the thing is being put at jeopardy.
It has been at jeopardy from day one.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know what I mean. That there was a time when people didn't need to be constantly having someone tugging at their sleeve. They saw the value of it. Well, all right, here's a good question to ask. Is this an information program, an entertainment program? If it's some of both, what are the
Yeah, but isn't that the kind of stuff the suits upstairs are supposed to be working out?
Yeah, but you are the suit upstairs. That's what I'm saying. It's
you don't. You're kind of missing my larger point. This is not. I mean, I can hear people going click, because this with all due respect and loving kindness, is not what this program is. I try not to, you know, because now we're way off in the weeds and we're playing night baseball.
Well, okay, it's your show. You can determine the content. I mean, but I'm just saying, as a concerned listener, I can't be the only person who's wondering about what has changed in
and
the
everybody,
dynamic.
And everybody has their theories, okay? But having been at this for almost 20 years...
Stay out of it? Is that what you're telling me?
No. After having been in this for 20 years, and having been doing essentially my thing, whatever that is, I've seen it happen before. Like I said, I've seen it. It happens every presidential election year. And now that campaigns are almost 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and there's never any let-up, that means the politicians are constantly out there sucking oxygen out of the room. I saw it during the Great Purity Wars of 2016. And I've mentioned before, that was painful. I've seen it, I mean, I've seen some of it in the fact that, you know, odd things happen when you work on the left, because you never know when they're going to jump in there and take something from, and this is not a critique of leftness, okay, but you never know when something's going to resonate with them. There were big stories in the news today about how Mother Russia is in a serious retreat in the northeast of Ukraine.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Did the Czechs bounce?
Well, he's got a shitty army for starters. You know, this is not Putin does not have the World War II army where everybody had to pitch in and do something.
Well, that may be the
among other things. Having read some of the information, he is, you know, the crown is not resting easily on the head of Putin, okay? And he is disincentivized from pulling the average well-heeled Muscovite boy from his happy little Muscovite life to go and fight in the, what do they call it? I can't even remember what he called it. It's not a war, at least not according. So the bottom line is, Putin is using criminals.
It's an incursion, to use Nixon's.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, Putin is using the dregs of Russian society. He's using criminals. They're poorly trained, poorly organized. They are poorly supported, and there is that, you know, there's a serious morale problem inside the ranks. But beyond, and you always remember, remember playing Risk?
Nah, I was more of a Monopoly kid.
Well, in Risk, if you're the defender, you get an advantage. Because theoretically, you're fighting for your home soil, and that makes people fight harder.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This is Ukraine literally fighting for their lives, and, you know, these dregs of society soldiers from Mother Russia are fighting because someone told them they had to.
Well, you couldn't even...
And there's no bombs going off in central Moscow. There are no fleets of planes flying over Sebastopol, okay?
Well, Putin has two strikes against him, first of all. He may have more than just two. But from where I'm sitting, he's got two strikes against him. First of all, it was a foolhardy mission to go in there and try to retake to reconstitute the former Soviet Union place by place in Ukraine. I mean, the people weren't behind that mission to begin with. And then when your idea of recruitment is taking the dregs of society and forcing them pretty much to go in there, you're not going to have a good outcome, because you've got a bad mission and then you've got less than optimal quality in terms of the people who are supposed to fulfill the mission and be victorious. So yeah, I would be putting down my gun and headed back.
And see, there's a long history of this. I mean, when the Tsarist forces in World War I got sick of fighting, you know, at the same time the country was in complete political upheaval, and Lenin and Trotsky and others were theorizing and rallying, and eventually the Russian troops just put down their guns and walked away from the Eastern Front. And there's kind of a habit of that because Russia, during the Second World War, you know, the officer corps' job was to stand at the back and shoot and shoot Russian soldiers in the back who didn't fight hard enough. I mean, that's a broad overgeneralization, but it happened. Because the authoritarian streak runs deep in Mother Russia. But beyond that, the larger point I was making is that one never knows when the left, you know, what left, is going to bite on some bit of wild-ass propaganda. And the Russia-Ukraine war is one of those instances. There are people on the left, who earnestly believe that Ukraine was a festering snake pit of Nazis, Ukro-Nazis. And that Pooty, sweet, lovable Pooty, just went in there to clean them out. You know, never mind the fact that Volodymyr Zelensky's grandparents, Holocaust survivors, fought actual Nazis. They do have a fairly sophisticated disinformation network, and they know how to make it palatable. You know, they, back to 2016, they weren't just working the right wing end of the street. The single most visited site on Facebook for Black Lives Matter was being run out of a goddamn Russian troll farm. And lots and lots and lots of people bit. And so when I say that I stand with the people of Ukraine, I'm going to lose some percentage of the audience, you goddamn neoliberal. You know, and I joke about it from 2000, you goddamn neoliberal establishment swill. I mean, it's become a joke, but it was real. I mean, my pal Malloy, who will take a backseat to no one in his progressive politics, got vilified by some of his own listeners for not swearing allegiance to Jill fucking Stein and declaring that Hillary Clinton was the goddamn devil. And that stuff is still, you know, that stuff's still out there. And some of it, you know, I know personally the fact that, you know, I do, because the Republicans have chosen to make the LGBTQ community their target of opportunity number one, with particular emphasis on the T part of that, and I talk about it, I've gotten grief from people for talking about it. I've gotten pushback over my voice, Scott, because I have to live out in the world too, and it's really conflicting for me to get on air
and sound like Bob Kincaid,
and then have to turn around and completely retool my voice so that I don't get clocked as a dude in a dress when I'm out in my community.
Well, the people who listen to this show with any regularity know what the deal is, because they've been around long enough to have lived.
And
through
some
it.
Of them bailed when I transitioned.
Well, that wasn't exactly where I was going. Would it help if you did something about the intro, kind of revamp that to reflect?
Oh, that's on my list. Yeah, that annoys me every night when I play it. I could just start doing a cold opening every night, but everybody has intro music.
No, I like the intro. It needs to reflect.
I've got a
you.
Script for it, but trying to get somebody to do it and voice it and put it together, you know what a chore production can be.
Yeah, but I mean, it's been long enough now where it needs to. Well, I'm not.
Kidding. I agree.
I've already found out what happens when you give well thought out and concerned input about the. I'm not bailing or bashing or anything. I'm just trying to assist.
No, I understand. I understand. But
bringing whatever expertise.
Yeah, but the night baseball aspect is, you know. is very real, and people will, and I mean, people will, because this is not what people tune in for.
I understand this is why people don't, this is isn't the prime reason to listen, but it's very frustrating to be a fan and a supporter of the program, Robin.
Imagine being the hostess.
Well, I don't think I've got a good imagination.
Let's leave it expressly there.
Okay, now I thought I was making a valid point, but before I can even get it out, it's like you're naysaying or arguing with me, and I don't intend for it to be an argument. I just want to be supportive.
Oh, I don't think it is.
I don't know. Maybe somebody else has another.
I don't see it as argument.
See, because the last thing I want to do is have an audience loaded with people doing that pained and patented Mika Brzezinski sigh every 3 seconds out there in Radio Land. That's not helpful. If you think this is not helpful, that's not helpful. I just I'd like to see the program have a future. And if sharing from where I'm sitting and any helpful tips that I could throw in is not being helpful, then I'll not call again about it. I mean, I just it's just very frustrating that it's hard enough doing the program 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, but then to add to that the fact that people apparently they may be on your side, but it's not being demonstrated in a way that really, if it's not being demonstrated, it jeopardizes the future of the program. That's all I'm saying. And that to me, I mean, it wasn't like you were working hard enough just doing the fucking program for the program's sake. Now you got to put on your fundraising hat, and I don't know what's wrong with people.
I think it's a political year, and I think people are stressed out and worn out. You know, this also coincides with some pretty brutal inflation, and even just keeping things going here becomes more difficult. You know, price of gas, price of food, price of everything. There's a story that I've alluded to a couple of times. There is literally everybody's out there going, holy shit, what's going on with my power bill? Well, it's worldwide. It is literally worldwide. And if you were more prone to go down or to work the Alex Jones corner of the street, you'd swear there was an international conspiracy of hydrocarbon companies that have decided that, you know, I halfway believe this, Scott. You know, the stimulus went out there to keep people alive during the pandemic, and the corporate world, particularly corporate America, said, look at that, the proles are walking around with a little bit of money in their pocket. Well, how do we take it from them? I know. We'll jack the prices up on everything.
I saw a clip. You talk about it being a worldwide thing. It was on, who's the guy on Sunday night on HBO, the British guy? He's got a little half-hour show. I can't think of his name. He showed a clip from a British program where they have a lucky listener, and they spin a wheel, and the two spaces on the wheel, they repeat, are either £1,000, because it's Britain after all, or you get your utility bill paid for 4 months. And what they take caller number 9, or the British equivalent of that, spin the wheel, and some wonderful listener got 4 months of utilities paid. So yeah, it's pretty much a global phenomenon, except in places where people don't have electricity. I don't know what they spin the wheel for in those parts of the world. But and people act like, well, this is just normal. Well, no, it's not at all normal. It's what happens when people get walked on and kicked around and whizzed on and all this other stuff, and don't have sense enough to stand up for their own futures and lives, and vote in an intelligent way. I mean, this lady and this new, what is with the British people? What happened to the Labour Party? How is it that they
well, I'll probably piss people off by saying this, but Jeremy Corbyn happened to the Labour Party.
And Jeremy, and,
but he did, from time to time he would stick his foot in his mouth, or if not stick his foot in his mouth, say things that could be used or twisted to pernicious ends by the other side. And you know, the whole there was a great outcry over anti-Semitism, and it was ugly. And don't discount the power of the Brexiteers. You know, by God, they wanted to break some shit, and they wanted to hear shit getting broken.
Brexiteio.
And they were, I say, oh boy, I'm damned well tired of all these foreigners in our country doing the work that, well, we don't particularly want to do, but must they all bring their trucks from the continent? Oh, my word. And xenophobia is not a new phenomenon in the Cyprid Isle.
No, I wouldn't think so. Not for a moment.
And it's, and see, here I go again. People who aren't attuned to these issues don't necessarily know. But that is an island tearing itself. I mean, we're not the only people dealing with these issues, because again, it is a manufactured issue. England in particular is tearing itself apart over, I swear, who gets to go to the loo and when and where. Makes me yearn to the days of the Raj, when everyone knew where to go and piss in a hole. I mean, I kid, but it's true. I mean, in certain circles that I follow now, England is referred to as Turf Island because of the turfs. These filthy bigots whose origins lay in Nazism, who are all in a lather over people like me, who happen to be people like me, who happen to be people over there. And I swear, I think the Commonwealth will fall apart if we don't have hard, harsh laws about who can go to the loo and when and where. Well. I mean, you've got people like Joanne Rowling, whose, you know, beloved Harry Potter series was all about, you know, a space for people who don't necessarily fit in, and then she turns out to be one of the worst of the turfs, and pours gasoline on something that was already burning pretty nicely. And I look forward to hearing from Chris in Germany after she hears this as a podcast. She follows things fairly closely. It's not just that. It's Brexit. It's, there's a sort of, devolutionary urge or a spasm, particularly in England, but in the larger UK as well. And that's part of the global thing. No, we were talking about energy. I had another story here, and if you give a about climate change, this one ought to keep you up at night. This is cold sweats at 3 a.m. kind of stuff for the people who pay attention to the issue of climate change. It's a Reuters story. The dateline is New Delhi today. and an advisory body to the Indian government. Remember, they're the world's largest democracy. And I'm not saying that sarcastically. But this advisory body says that India may need up to 28 gigawatts. You know, somebody call Doc Brown. Get the flux capacitor working.
Well, wait a minute. How big is a gigawatt, for those who don't know, like me?
Well, we'll work through that. India may need up to 28 more gigawatts of new coal-fired power plants. Okay, that's the part that makes you just kind of liver quiver. 28 gigawatts of new coal-fired power plants by 2032. Remember, 2032 is 3 years past the 2029 drop-dead date for us getting rid of all fossil fuel energy generation on planet Earth if we want to be continue to be a going concern as a species. At present, India consumes 404.1 gigawatts of coal-fired energy. Of energy, period. That is expected to double by 2032, and they're going to have 28 gigawatts of coal-fired energy on board by then, because the rest of the world is tired of looking at us and saying, well, we'd kind of like to live like them. And devil take the hindmost if we've got to burn a shit ton of coal to do it. It is seen, this is from the Central Electricity Authority, an advisory body to the Federal Power Ministry in India. It is seen that apart from under-construction coal-based capacity of 25 gigawatts, the additional coal-based capacity required till 2031-32 may vary from 17 gigawatts to around 28 gigawatts. Now, there's the climate change aspect of that, and then there's the, where the fuck is that coal going to come from? It is, after all, a finite resource. And it's going to come on barges, and it's going to come by boat. And, of course, there is coal mining in India, and it is some of the most brutal and deadly coal mining in the world. And the annual demand on the electricity grid in India is expected to grow by an average of 7.2% over 5 years from now till March 2027. And that is double the rate that it increased between 2017 and 2022. At that point in time, you're into a terrifying degree of exponential growth. Remember at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, we talked about that model of the pond with the lily pads, and you know, you start with one lily pad, then you got two, and you go from 2 to 4, and 4 to 8, 8 to 16, 16 to 32, 32 to 64, and you can and in that model, you can think you're okay until the last day, when the pond is just nothing but lily pads anymore with the last exponential increase.
Is it like that hair care commercial and so on and so on?
Yeah,
and so
yeah,
on?
It really is.
Yeah.
Until the number of people who found out about Prel or whatever it was are reduced to a single pixel on the screen.
Well, I'm still trying to figure out coal, okay? What year is this? This is 2022, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Are the Indian people not aware of other forms of energy?
Sure they are. But they cannot meet their needs solely with that, because their consumption is outpacing their ability to generate from green or renewable sources, just like it mostly is in the rest of the world. And so, you know, and the technology is not, you know, because we keep doing stupid things like pumping money into carbon capture and sequestration non-technology.
Yeah.
And,
well, isn't...
And so the store, it's a matter of getting the power from where it can be generated to where it can be used.
Isn't another aspect of the problem, if we had all listened to President Carter back in the 70s and really made a firm, like, moonshot commitment to seeing the, first of all, clearly seeing the handwriting on the wall and then working in a manner consistent with changing what the handwriting on the wall said, we might be in a bit, we would surely be in a much better or a somewhat better position now.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But until somebody comes up with the time machine, we are where we are. You know, I mean,
I'm just saying that untold billions of dollars in this country and probably elsewhere were poured into an effort to poo-poo any useful helpful idea.
The American Petroleum, the American Petroleum Institute comes to mind.
That's just one of the pictures in the Rogues Gallery, you know.
But they have probably poured more money into denying climate change than any other single organization.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying about disappearing jobs and adding to the plight of the mining people in the mining industry, the actual workers. Those people could have. It's a wonder we've gotten as far as we have. That's part of the problem. And I don't see much of a future ahead. I really don't, because...
Well, it's going to be challenging as hell.
Well, you think?
And, you know, for the millennials who will be here long after we are gone, I am for all the dark and stormy things we talk about here, I'm kind of a... sunshiny little optimist. I want to see how this plays out. I am a humanist. I am anthropogenic centrist. I think humanity has the opportunity to be its own salvation or its own damnation. And the problem is with the people with the money have been working for the damnation side of it. Because, and by the way, 28 gigawatts is 28 trillion watts, Scott. Trillion. You know, a trillion of anything is a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And
especially if you're counting them up and the phone rings and you lose your place in the count.
In pennies.
Yeah.
Sorry, another cartoon reference. But, you know, they're using 404 trillion watts, and it's going to double to 808. And can the planet withstand that? You know, we had the news out the other day about it's not if the Greenland ice cap melts, it's when. And when is probably going to happen faster than most people expected. And that's going to be 1 foot of sea level rise on every coast in the world. And it, 1 foot. What's a foot? Yeah, foot of snow, whatever. But a 1 foot sea level rise in Bangladesh, a 1 foot sea level rise on the Mississippi Delta, a 1 foot sea level rise in Miami, and places like Miami that's run by that ugly little fascist DeSantis. Well, you know, he said, "What, you know what we'll do? We'll go out and we'll build a big wall out in the ocean. It'll stop the sea level." Really?
Well, and if you read the brochures, the colorful and positive brochures of the people who poo-poo the idea of any problem being present with a 1 foot rise in sea level, they're up there selling vacation property at the North Pole for when it becomes a tropical paradise.
Right, or they're buying timeshares from Elon Musk on Mars.
No, to quote old Paul Harvey, you can run, but you can't hide. I don't think there's a I hate to be pessimistic. You know me.
Well, yeah.
But I just don't think that there's a way out of this. The opportunity for the determining or determining and sorting out and addressing the way out was close to 50 years ago. And we blew that deliberately. We were
lying. And now we deal with the consequences. That's why I was talking about, you know, millennials who will see 2100. You know, there's no reason not to think that my grandkids, they will be very old people by then, but they may very well be sitting there at New Year's Eve 2099, and I don't know how they're going to ring in the new century. They're the new year.
In scuba gear, probably.
Well, I mean...
And that's no joke. I mean...
No, I've joked a long time about, you know, the fact that we maybe ought not be blowing up West Virginia because might turn out to be some pretty decent beachfront property in a couple of hundred years. But it's like the story I had on Friday evening, Scott. Because I find value in things that might look otherwise mundane because my brain is weird. And when I saw the responses of people to a news story here about a brand new plant that's opened in South Charleston, West Virginia, and God knows we need the jobs, and they're going to make electric school buses.
Oh, I heard that.
Yeah, and one of the first electric school buses has gone to down around Hinton, West Virginia, which is kind of generally in my area. And people were hopping up and down. Goddamn thing's going to blow up like flash paper. All them children's going to be incinerated. What are we going to do when it won't get up the mountain and we got to get a manly diesel fueled tow truck to haul them children the rest of the way to the annual dust up with them kids from Busted Knuckle High School?
Some of those responses, I wonder if there are still people who used to work for National Lampoon. Because the letters to the editor of National Lampoon were laugh out loud funny, all made up, of course. I can't help but think some clever people got in on that.
No.
But did anybody raise... Now, this is a serious issue when you're talking about electric school buses in West Virginia, Robin. Did anybody raise the point of the manufacture and distribution and use of those super long extension cords that you need to plug into the back of the electric school bus on one end and have plugged into the wall at some other end? That is going to cause just a wealth of problems.
Oh, yeah, miles and miles. Yeah, right, sure.
My little kid tripped over this super long extension cord and we're going to sue.
And they're so simple because one of the neatest things is that the downtime on the power grid just happens to be at the same time that you'll be charging the school buses.
When demand is lowest.
Right. And these are still mostly coal-fired power plants, so that's going to be great for Appalachian Power. But try telling that to, and that's the thing. There's a connection. These are the same people who, the same people that are barking and grunting about electric school buses are the same people that are hooting and hollering about drag queens and restrooms. And they know precisely nothing about any of these topics.
I just know they don't like it because somebody on Fox News told them not to like it. And they got a cousin. They got a cousin. Who's got a bus driver who's a drag queen in an electric school bus. And they're turning these children into a bunch of sissy little liberals and turning them away from God.
The poisonous message must be getting through. I don't know if I know that Todd in South Carolina and Steve in Georgetown are two of our biggest fans of Washington Journal. But the message must be getting through. Some of these people, I wonder... Don't they have families that care for them? I mean, that would be concerned that they are that batshit crazy with some of these talking points that they call in on Washington Journal. It's frightening. The message must be getting through somewhere. Otherwise, you wouldn't have these irretrievably ridiculous, stupid
Look, I mean, for one,
about the school buses where you are, and on a national level, Washington Journal. Where are these people coming from? I don't get that they're putting us on. These are actual people.
They are. And the larger point is, you know, talking about Washington Journal, Washington Journal just lets these people on and lets them talk, spout their blitheritious bullshit uncritically. Oh, that's great for you. We're glad you believe that. Thank you. Next, okay, Dan Dow to the Democrat line. Jesus, Pedro, are you drinking this morning?
Well, I talk to Pedro every now and again, and
I know you do.
There's a 30-day limit. If I could call more often, I would, because some of those... And then, in the hour after the open phones, or 2 hours, whatever it is, they have a guest, and I don't know why they don't clear the lines, because some of the crazies still think it's open phones. And they're talking their nonsense. And there was this guy on the other day. I forget who he was and why he was there. But the expression on his face was like, what the hell am I doing here? I thought this was C-SPAN.
Get Don on the phone.
Get Don on the phone.
And where are those pictures I was supposed to see?
Jesus. I don't envy the millennials and the other young people who actually will live into the dawn of the next century, because I don't watch a lot of science fiction, but the dystopian nature of whatever's ahead in 75 years.
Oh, well, I just had a note from Randy Radar, and Randy Radar said in the year 2100, they'll be dealing with the Y21C leap year bug, and it's like, oh, no. I'm just going to put my head in a bucket of lye and walk screaming off a cliff. What?
It wasn't Brewer and Shipley. It was another duo. Remember that song in the year 2525?
Yeah, that was not Brewer and Shipley. You're right.
No, it was Hager and those were on Hee Haw, the Hagers. Somebody will look it up. In the year 2525. There's your dystopian future right there.
Yeah, sure.
And we're plotting it out right now. That's the... It was avoidable at one point. Now I don't think so much. I think it's not.
No, in the year 2105, it'll be, goddamn, Mom, algae stew for dinner again.
Yeah, but get you some algae stew helper, and you'll be all right.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, you could have had that, but tomorrow's plankton. No, because the oceans will be freaking dead. I mean, you can get real grim real quick, and then you remember that the Georgia Guidestones were there with some suggestions for how to rebuild society after the collapse, and they got blowed up because it was offending Clyde and Arley, because it was clearly from the Illuminati.
Oh my God.
Oh, and yes, in the year 2525, that would be, thank you, Ralphs.
Jaeger and
No, close.
Bartles and James.
Burns and Allen. No, Zager and Evans.
Zager and Evans. How could I forget?
And why would you want to?
I
And I do need to send some thank yous out with all of that having been said. Thank you so much to our...
You mean this dialogue actually raised a few bucks? How did
thank
that
you
happen?
So very much to Mary Bell, and thank you to an anonymous friend of ours. We are $60 into Darlene's challenge, and so that means there's $90 in challenge money still out there. And, hey, 10 minutes to bring it in. So let's finish the last 40 of Darlene's, and see where it goes from there.
Do you have more contributions? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
I just have a serious note about the passing of Her Majesty Elizabeth II.
Well, you got a giggle out there from Tamara.
Oh,
your neighbor.
Oh, by the way, I need to...
Hold on. She's awarded you. She has awarded you a cowbell. Will you be gracious?
All right. Let me sit out.
There. Algae stew helper, lol.
Ask for it by name. I need to.
And you know, you need the Sam Elliott voice or
Plankton. It's what's for dinner.
Aaron Copeland, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And the news. Tamara, if you've got my number or email, be in touch with me, please, because I got a little project I want to talk to you about. But anyway, the passing of Queen Elizabeth, and I could go on forever about the royal family and why I don't like royals, but I do see the need for them, if only for the tourist purposes in merry old England. But it's getting to the point. See, they take a good thing and they stretch it out, the media does. Do you remember when Tim Russert keeled over?
Yes.
In the production studio? And there was no end of the plaudits, it was like all Russert all the time on what a wonderful human being Tim Russert was. And I'm sure he was wonderful in some ways and not wonderful in others. But how many, we've got another 10 days of this shit. And I mean, yeah, she was 70 years on the throne and blah, 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 blah. But I just, all Queenie all the time is not working for me. It's truly not.
That's why I can't turn on my filthy morning habit. It's like Steve from Georgistan said, you know, it's going to be wall-to-wall Caddy K, and, you know, and every break they'll have to come on and put her mascara back on because it's running again.
Yeah.
And in fact, there was a moment. Oh, dear, let me see if I can find this. Okay, so Suman said, no subject. It's okay, Robin. At least in the future, we don't have to spend too much for ornaments. We can just use toilet seats as specified on the Motel of the Mysteries. You know what? You get a cowbell, Suman, for bringing up Motel of the Mysteries. One of the great satiric pieces of literature, and the fact that it deals with archaeology, oh. Yeah, so,
Zager and Evans.
Zager and Evans. But if you have never seen Motel of the Mysteries, you need to find someone. The picture of the archaeologist's wife wearing a toilet seat with the sanitized for your protection band is for the ages.
Is this a book?
Yeah, yeah. It was back in the 70s, Motel of the Mysteries? Yeah.
My.
And I just saw, I have to, because I have a feeling I'm going to be running rabbits here. Yeah, there it is. Oh. The Justice Department, because, you know, we had the clip about this earlier. The Justice Department said it is open to a judge appointing one of the candidates that former President Donald Trump's legal team put forward as a special master to review the documents seized from Mar-a-Lago, according to a court filing just a little bit ago. The DOJ said Senior Judge Raymond Deary of New York is acceptable, along with its two previously proposed selections, retired federal judges Barbara Jones and Thomas Griffith. Each have substantial judicial experience during which they have presided over federal criminal and civil cases, including federal cases involving national security and privilege concerns. Deary is so old, he was appointed to the bench by old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan.
Would that be the modern judicial equivalent of the guy that the old senator from Mississippi, John Stennis, that Nixon wanted to put on the headphones and listen to the tapes to tell the
yes,
people what
yes,
he,
I was thinking, my first thought was the, you know, the ancient guardian of the grail in Indiana Jones, but yeah, he chose poorly.
Yeah, I just watched that the other night.
But the thing is, by saying, okay, this one's okay, and this one's okay, that means Aileen Cannon now knows to select the dude who's married to the judge on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, who is a Federalist Society punk.
Well, they're all Federalist Society punks. And what is a special master bullshit? I want a special mistress. I want a lady with
You don't have to make this all weird.
With a vinyl outfit and a whip and a gun and a chair. And
Scott.
Lindsay would wet himself. get off on.
Oh, and I saw Kevin in Massachusetts sent this along over the weekend.
Pop a nipple clip.
There was, I saw a line, and I think it had to do with potential criminal exposure for Trump's lawyers, someone like that. But the line that the WAG used was, and they'll flip faster than Lindsey Graham at a three-way. you snorted, yeah.
Yes.
Tamara says you're not in her Rolodex. All I know is that he's over by Lips, which is our local drag bar, LOL. Hope everything's okay with him, Tamara.
Well, I know you don't ordinarily do this, but as a special favor, would you email Tamara and just give her my email so I can reach out to her?
Let me see here.
I truly appreciate it.
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to figure out some way to... Here, maybe I can do it this way. Yeah. Full service radio. I mean, no... I'm going to have to do it after the show.
Okay, I'll send you the contact stuff and you can pass it along. I truly appreciate that.
Yeah, sure thing. No problem.
Well, Robin, I see that we're almost through with the Monday edition of this. I really am. I want to just be clear that I'm not bashing.
No. I didn't think you were. It's just that when, you know, it's like what Lady B says, you know, save your relatability for your friends. The only time I worry about, you know, people going click is when we get off in the technical weeds on something, whether it be, you know, how this program finds listeners or why the Knuten valve isn't properly interfacing with the flageolet on the production machine. And
speaking of technical weeds, you know, I'm still in my late summer sleeping schedule, so I don't get to listen live as much. Mm-hmm. But I do listen to the replay. I didn't realize this. Podbean has a setting where you can play back the show at up to 2.5 times speed.
And if you think I sound funny now.
Oh, it's great because you don't, it's still quite intelligible and you don't really sound like chipmunks, you and the callers. But it's a good way to listen to get the content.
Well, it sure cuts my pregnant pauses down, and that's a blessing.
Well, yeah, you're the prince of pauses.
Princess, thank you.
Did I say prince? I meant princess. Stop it. Just stop it. I'm having a hard time as it is.
Hello. Why do you have to be this way?
Not all of us can sound like droopy dogs. That's all I'm saying.
Thanks for noticing me.
Yes.
Eeyore.
Anyway, I Horn family, do whatever you can do.
Let's finish Darlene's challenge, pretty please. $40.
Hey, you don't want to make Darlene mad. I've heard her mad, and it's even up in New England. I was quivering and quaking. When one night she was just fit to be tied. So let's not make her angry.
Let's don't. And we will... well, gosh, we will see where Titanic Tuesday takes us. Shan't we?
It's like a little radio cruise. Now, tell me again about the schedule. You're going away Wednesday, or is it Thursday?
It's either Wednesday or Thursday. I have to get the information back to tell me, but, you know, I've got a very long drive ahead of me.
And this will be to D.C.?
No.
Oh, I thought it was your first trip to D.C.
No, it's Coal River Mountain Watch stuff, but it's not D.C. And to be quite honest, I could have flown. But
don't do that.
But boy, would my wings have been tired?
Yeah.
Boy, from the flapping. But all things being equal, I elected not to fly because there's something about getting on a great big aluminum tube with lots of people not wearing masks that makes me think I did not want to come home and instead of bringing some pathetic T-shirt home to Annette, that I'd be bringing her COVID instead.
All she brought me was this lousy COVID.
Yeah, no, virus. And the other part of it is that while the Biden administration has said that they're making some changes for people like me, I'm celebrating my 2 years in transition on the 15th, 3 days from now. I'll be on the road, probably, or else at my destination on my 2 year anniversary, my 2 year transiversary. And I don't care. Well, no, I do care. That's exactly why I'm not flying. I am sensitive enough about my body that I don't want anybody patting me down with the fronts of their hands, the backs of their hands. I don't want anybody asking me to spread anything. And even though my documents are all correct, there's too much opportunity for abuse when you're talking about the TSA.
Yeah, I hadn't even considered that. But yeah, if the COVID weren't enough, the cattle call that you've got to go through just to get on the fucking plane is a nightmare. And it's an especially vivid nightmare, like you say, in your situation. And I don't.
I don't want the little siren going off when I go through the scanner and they go, wow, you know, her pelvis doesn't match her. Oh, fuck, no. And, you know, maybe it doesn't happen to other people like me, but there is a law of nature that says if it can happen, it will happen to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know how that works. Been there, done that.
Take your shoes off.
Yeah. Look on the bright side. You know, when these crazies act ugly on the plane and they're not asking,
yeah,
they still get through with the metal plate in their head, so I don't think your pelvis would present too much of a challenge to the equipment.
No. But, you know, you know what I need? I didn't even think about this because I've done several road trips now. My first one was in, like, May of last year. But I've been on the road a few times since. Long trips, and they worked out fairly well. But, you know, I need to look up, and it's better when you get it from somebody you can trust. I need to learn traveling while girl.
Ooh, what an idea.
Because there are like for instance, I'm guessing when you're flying, for a variety of reasons, you do not wear pantyhose or tights. Because anything that's hard to get on is going to be hard to take off.
Yeah.
Although there's another, you know, for circulation purposes in those little tiny cramped seats, a snug pair of tights could be good for circulation and prevent things like, you know, deep vein thrombosis and whatnot. Does one wear an underwire bra, or does one eschew that in favor of a natural cup? I don't know these things. I'm still learning. I need to look into these things. By the way, Darlene wrote in and said, "That's right, damn it!" LOL. Don't cross Darlene.
In future trips, you ought to organize a magic bus, like a rainbow bus of some sort, like the Keezy bus for the electric Kool-Aid acid test or something.
Yeah.
And get a group.
And sadly, Neil Cassidy's not around to drive it anymore.
Yeah. Well, anyway. I just...
Well, Scott, have a good evening. I'm glad you called. And I was not trying to be contentious. I was trying to move the show back over into talking about the things we talk about on the show.
Well, I wasn't trying to be contentious either.
Oh, I know you weren't. You're fine.
It's the management in me. It's the programmer in me. And I don't...
I, too, have been a program director, and I fight her every day. It's,
program, the time that I was a program director and the time that I was a telemarketer are both just, you know, they're lining up an entire hive of murder hornets for me in hell just for those two things.
Well, you'll work it out. I have nothing but, I have the confidence of a Christian holding four aces, as Mark Twain once noted. Anyway, take care. If I don't talk to you before the road trip, travel safely. Horn family, hello, I'm waving to you. Can you hear me wave? I'm waving left-handed today. And I appreciate your presence, yours and theirs.
Well, before you go, I want you to hear something absolutely lovely, because I apparently conjured Lady B, and Lady B never ceases to bring her A-game, and she never ceases to inspire. I'd voice a new intro for you. I'd do it for free. It's the production part you'd have to do. I'm working on getting a hold of another studio space for a podcast my cousin wants me to do, so if you script it, I'll do it. Thank you, Lady B.
I can listen to that.
As far as your podcast, you are a strong, gutsy woman. I would never do a 3-hour, 5-day show like yours. As you know, funding is difficult to come by, and after taking my neighbor to the store today, prices just keep going up. It's expensive. Not to say you don't have generous listeners, and we do. You have a handful of some very generous people, and if they say they don't want you to talk about certain things, I wouldn't blame you. But I know that's not who you are. Your indignation may be righteous, but that's because you truly care about what you talk about. You're a voice for the voiceless. You're important. And that's why you push on, even though you know that the next show could truly be the last broadcast. I wish I could do more financially. I'm not going to describe my financial status. You know I'm barely scraping by, even though I'm trying to act as if I don't know it. I'm literally doing what I can. I know you appreciate it, and I do. Every penny I appreciate. Because I know that everything represents a sacrifice. Again, I admire your bravery. I admire any non-commercial radio show, sorry, podcast, for doing their damnedest to keep doing what they love, to keep doing the one thing they know they're good at. And you are very, very good at it. I'm blushing. Thank you. Oh, all the nights I wish I was back on the air doing what I love. Do you think it's my dream job to go from being somewhat of a local celebrity to hear my parents brag about me to their friends to cleaning toilets? No. It has happened to a lot of us. Hell, I know a guy who went from making $150K a year to driving trucks for DHL. 36 years. And now he's just a delivery driver with great pipes. On the other hand, I turn on the local stations to hear men and women who were as boring as straight-laced then as they are now. Oh, they have talent. Talent in the sense that they'll never stray from the script. Some of them got jobs through friend nepotism. Some because, as a woman in radio, it's not who you know, it's who you blow. So what's my point? Do what you need to do. If you want to keep doing this, do what you need to do. Will it mean introing yourself from a studio bequeathed to you like Mike does? Maybe you should promote someone's business. Fuck, this is why I can't market myself. Me neither. I'm terrible at that part, Lady B. Terrible. You know, I'm microphone person, barely tech person, and never, ever, ever marketing person. Maybe cut back to 2 hours, maybe 4 days a week. We'd miss you, but bills have got to be paid. If I won the lottery, I'd pay for a year, but that would make the rest of your listeners complacent. You speak the truth, and if there's cuss words involved, so be it. Reality isn't always polite, and you'd be a liar and a phony if you carried on that way. That's what makes your show so powerful. I discovered you through Mike, a true renegade. Who'd have thunk a girl from, by God, West Virginia would be one of the most powerful liberal voices out there? And hella entertaining. Do what you need to do. Never stop. We're a community. We'll get you there. We got to try. Godspeed, darling. You shine. Keep shining. God, Lady B. How can I thank you for that? I mean, how can I adequately express, or better than adequately express, what that means? You know, we talk about keeping the program going, and I hate how much I have to talk about keeping the damn program going. But it's those moments, and you said the same similar thing, Scott. It's the fact that this program means things to people. It is a community. It is a place in people's lives. And to be allowed to occupy that space for a time, no greater honor. No greater honor could I ever expect or hope to have. So thank you, Lady B.
Well, put me down as a yes for the Lady B show open.
Oh, hell yes.
I want to hear that.
Tamara said earlier, we need to get you a wealthy benefactor, LOL. You know, let me run over and sign up on sugardaddy.com. No, that didn't work out very well. But it's true. I mean, you know, look at, and it's hard to point to from the left side of things, Scott, and I've run over a little bit. But on the right, all you got to do is, you know, I don't know, throw a, you know, throw an old pop machine slug, and you'll hit somebody who is happily writing checks to keep right-wing radio on the air, even though there's not a goddamn word of truth in it. And I do, not to you know, nail myself up on the cross or anything, but I do try to make sure that I am saying accurate, factual things. If along the way I refer to someone as a shit weasel or a poopy head or something like that, it's only because the facts of the story have made it abundantly clear that they are. But factuality, accuracy, that is not even in the same universe with anybody who does this kind of work over on the right. It's like what we talked about at the beginning of the program. You know, you got people out there barking and grunting about things they know nothing about, things that they don't want to attend, things they don't want to participate in, children they don't give a fuck about. Because I promise you, they do not give a fuck about trans kids. And trans kids are real, even though I've been told that they are not. Why can't they just be gay till they sort it out? Gay and trans are not the same thing. And any gay person and any trans person could tell you. But again, facts don't matter over there. Because if there was some sort of law, Scott, that said the right wing had to campaign on facts, they would cease to exist.
Well, it's the same. It's the ongoing, endless litany of the same hateful shit day after day, week after week.
Well, I mean, earlier on. Look at that tweet from Stephen Miller. Joe Biden took our southern border away, and now we're not a republic anymore. That's not even word salad. That's not word slaw. That's just word glop. It's not even subject to definition.
And it's not reality-based reality.
And yet I'm sure he was retweeted a few thousand times.
Yeah, that's right. We ain't got no southern border no more.
And we're not a republic anymore. How about that? Well, what the hell are we? But again, you can't engage. You know, you can't engage them because if you say, you know, it's factually incorrect, socialist. And there are too many people in this country for whom screaming socialist at someone is deemed to be an appropriate form of intellectual discussion. I feel sorry for any politician who has to debate a right-wing candidate. Because you can call it whatever, you can call it cabbage, but the one thing you cannot call it is debate. Because they will not engage in debate. Debate is position A, counter position B, and it's not any of that. It's why when primary season comes around every 4 years, it's why we call them pageants.
Well, I wouldn't even give them the dignity of the term pageant.
But you see my point.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's just, and every 2, 4, 6 years, it comes around again with the regularity of...
And the right wing continues to do what the right wing continues to do because it continues to work. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, even if it breaks the nation in the process. Long as the check clears, right?
Well, they need to stop that shit. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know, that'd be nice, but until, you know, well, that's another show. Thank you so much to our dear friend Jude jumping in. We've got $30 to go on Darlene's challenge. $30 little dollars.
Hi, Jude.
Hey, Jude. Thank you. the Horn's spiritual advisor. I got to get out of here. We'll probably get through September with Podbean not throttling me, but because I'm going to miss some days. But still, probably ought to get out of here. Scott, have a good evening, my friend.
You have a good one, too. And Horn family, you have a good one. And I'll be back via email with my information for my neighbor.
Okay, and I'll send an introductory email both your ways.
Bless you.
Is there a particular email you want me to use?
I'll send you I'll send it all to you after I hang up.
Okay, cool. Listen, good. Take care.
I will, and if I don't talk to you before the time you travel safely, and buy me a coffee mug. My Horn mug is already lonely. It wants a friend.
If you were going to say broken, I was going to... Mm.
No. I wouldn't do that. Even if I broke it, I wouldn't tell you.
Oh, now I'm worried that it is.
No, it's safe and secure from all alarms.
All right. Leaning on the everlasting arms, yes.
Now it's leaning on the box of Rice Aroni, but
the San Francisco treat.
Ding-a-ding-ding. Okay, see ya.
See ya, bye. That was a hell of a conversation, wasn't it? Note, those things don't happen in most radio programs. They just don't. But anyway, we'll see what tomorrow brings. Probably rain. Never mind. Stop it, Robin. There are people who would like to have our rain. So thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you so much. You few, you happy few. We are at these are the thinner days for subscribers, so if you'd like to be a subscriber, welcome to jump in. I think we have a couple tomorrow. We have only one on the 7th. That was interesting to note. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. And that is from the bottom of my heart. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, from the Man Cave earlier today. Thank you so much. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and proudly now a union shop. Please stay safe. Make your best decision on when to get the booster. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, wear your mask in areas where maggots may be present, keep your social distance 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown wisely recommends. And of course, if somebody comes down the street and you hear them talking about, yeah, I think about a woman dying while I'm having sex with her all the time. Avoid that Republican congressional candidate like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.